We want to see policies that reflect our values. When it came to the same-sex marriage last year with the plebiscite, when it comes to humane treatments of refugees, when it comes to social policies, an issue like climate change. We want to see progress. We want to be moving towards the future. And Tony Abbott tends to be a very backwards focused, I think, in his rhetoric. I know he talks a lot about sort of protecting and defending. It's all about sort of holding things back to the past and going back to an older way. And I just don't think that's very positive.
Well, hello and welcome to Australian Politics Live. Have you rested over the summer? I've rested. I've rested so much I've forgotten how to host. I'm Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and this is my show. My guest this week is Zali Steggall, the independent who is taking on Tony Abbott in the Sydney seat of Warringah. Can she do it? I don't know. But I know that this will be one of the most gripping contests in the entire election season. What's she on about? Listen up. Zali, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
So for people like me who aren't Sydney-based, who have never been skiing in their lives, don't follow sport in any way at all, and therefore have no real organic sense of you. Tell me about Zali. What's your story?
I'm probably a quintessential Manly girl, mm-hmm. in terms of born in Manly, raised in Manly. My parents were unusual though, because they had a real itching for snow. And so they went and spent quite a few years in the French Alps.
Oh.
And they wanted, a bit like in Australia, we talk about having a sea change. They went and had a mountain change for the sake of living in the French Alps, skiing. And as a result, my brother and I were put into a school in France. Learned French, so in some ways French is my first language, and grew up in a ski resort where skiing was a natural, as natural as going
walking or
swimming,
whatever.
In Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
So I never questioned that it was maybe an unusual sport to pick as an Australian girl.
Well, kind of is, yeah.
And then came back to Manly for high school, went to Queenwood in Balmoral, and never really thought that it was an unusual dream to think that I could go to the Olympics for a winter sport coming from the northern beaches in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And so then had to really sort of start this plan of quite a dedicated program of spending seasons in Europe, and then doing the winter in Australia, winter in Europe. And I did that for 13 years, and always, I guess, quite focused on the goal, which was being as good as I could be at ski racing. So I guess if I had to describe myself as quite motivated and dedicated, I do know nothing comes easy. And look, I quit high school in my year 12 year to go to my first Olympics when I was 17. And I think maybe that's quite a sign of the faith my parents had in me, because they said, look, you can leave school, go to the Olympic, qualify for the Olympics, and then you'll come back and do your HSC by correspondence. And I stayed committed to that. And that's been very much my approach the whole way through. I did a BA in communications and media studies by correspondence while I skied. And my life in skiing was always very much on the road. And this was before the days of the internet. So you were very isolated. I carried a lot of books around. So a description of me, I think, is I'm quite determined. I'm not deterred easily by a task just because it may not be the obvious one.
Thing to do. And politics is a bit like downhill skiing, right?
Especially, I guess, in my electorate, Warringah, it's not an easy task ahead. It's quite a battle.
Mm.
I'm up against an incumbent that's been there a long time. He's very experienced. He's a very wily politician. He's seen off a lot of challenges.
Mm-hmm.
But from my point of view, just because it's a difficult task doesn't mean it's an impossible task. And I actually think with the right plan, the right team and the right approach and the right group and the right support, it's totally now there comes a right time for everything. And I do feel that it's a right time.
And now that's time. All right. Well, just flowing from what you've just said, there's two questions. So first of all, why take on Abbott? Why do it? And the second question is, why politics? Because obviously you had this sporting background, then you qualified as a barrister,
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
I'm acutely conscious of, good, rational, sane people leaving more quickly than they used to do. So, okay, so Abbott first and then politics second.
Well, Abbott, having always lived in the electorate as an adult. I've lived and worked there. I've had my own practice for the last 10 years as a barrister, whilst working in chambers. Raising my kids in Margalla, they've gone to the local public school and to other schools within the area. I'm very, I guess, engaged with the area, and I care a lot about how we're represented to the rest of Australia and the rest of the world. And whilst we've had great representation, I think, locally and at state level, I've been reasonably dissatisfied with our federal representation.
And why? Why?
I don't feel in any way represented by Tony Abbott.
Because of his views?
Yeah, I think as a working mother, as a female, I find him quite offensive in terms of his very conservative views as to women's roles. And you don't have to dig very deep to find some comments that are just so outlandish and so outrageous that it's offensive. But it's also in his inability to show flexibility or an open-mindedness to embrace or accept that there are different views and engage in a discussion or a conversation so that you can actually then, I appreciate that not everyone's going to agree with a decision, but if you can at least feel that when you've reached a decision, it's been through a process that there's a consultation and there's a process of fact finding and taking into account all opinions so that ultimately the outcome is a balanced one. I've always felt with him that there's no question of trying to find a balance. It's a question of his view. And he's been very clear about what his view is. And it's a very, I think, unchanging and unflexible view. And then regardless of any other views that emerge within the electorate or concerns that emerge, he's made it quite clear he's not interested in really letting that impact the position he's prepared to take on, take to Parliament. And so I think over the years, more and more disaffected, I think, in the electorate. And I think I represent a lot of other people that are quite disaffected by his views. And I think it's time for a change. I think there's a generation, there's a question of a new voice and new generation and new ideas. There has to be turnover. There has to be change.
And politics. Why politics?
Well, like, politics, again, as a educated, progressive, I believe in equity. I believe in opportunities. I'm on the board of Queenwood because I want to encourage those girls to go out into the world absolutely determined to take it on and aim high. I think ultimately you have to walk the talk. And if I'm very opinionated and passionate about things, I have that opportunity to make a difference, whether it's inspire others, whether it's make a difference in terms of legislation, whether it's a question of shining a light onto a topic and making sure something doesn't sort of slip under the radar, that we can maintain the conversation. And climate change, I'm really concerned. I've got teenagers at home. I can see that they have that. I think there's that overall concern of where is it heading? What kind of world are they going to work in or live in? And I do feel there's that sense of responsibility. So as much as politics can seem really daunting, I don't think it's that far a stretch from being an advocate. So as a barrister, we're in court representing the best interest of the clients to the court.
And you're used to conflict.
Used to conflict, used to thinking on our feet, but also used to representing others before the court. And I do see the role as a representative in Parliament as very much that we are representing the views of our electorate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so looking from outside, since your campaign launched, I think...
It's been a whirlwind.
Yes, exactly. looking at your materials, looking at the way you're presenting, it all looks pretty slick to me. It all looks like there's a lot of preparation involved in it. It looks like you've got professionals assisting you behind the scenes. Tell me a little bit about your operation. How does it work? Because obviously you're not a member of a major party. You don't have that infrastructure behind you. So what have you got? What infrastructure do you have behind you?
We are a fully operating team of people with very specific expertise in the areas that they're here for, but also a really passionate team of people that have come from community groups that have come through over the course of the last few years. I have my operations manager was campaign manager for James Matheson in 2016, so she knows the electorate. My campaign manager was the campaign manager for Dr. Phelps in her Wentworth by-election. So The point is, you don't take on a task like this unprepared. You don't just put your hat in the ring and hope it's all going to fall into place. That's not how I approach my skiing career. It's not how I approach my cases in court. And it's certainly not how I would approach probably one of my biggest battles and a massive, you know, a major career change. To me, I think how I've been successful in life, whether it's sport or law, is the preparation. You have to put in the work. No athlete turns up and stands on the top step of the podium by accident, or it's not an overnight success. It's generally been a lot of hard work and a really strong team behind them.
And what about money? It's enormously expensive running a political campaign. Have you got major backers? How are you planning on funding this campaign?
The campaign is, we're relying on the crowdfunding and community support. There's no doubt that there is a variety of community support around the electorate. There's a lot of very disenfranchised, moderate Liberal voters that are contributing to the campaign via that the donations through the website, as are a huge number of small local, whether it's actually, ironically, it's people living in the electorate, but I'm getting a huge number of people from all over Australia.
Giving you money at this point.
Well, donating, because it's very, Tony Abbott has been very polarising. He is seen as very much, he's been a, I think, a handbrake on a lot of areas of progress in Australia. And I think that view is shared by a lot of people around Australia. And since announcing, we have had a huge amount of support from everywhere in Australia and letters from people saying, I have voted Liberal all my life, but he is destroying the Liberal Party. I want to see him go. So there's clearly a lot of levels, you know, people, a lot of people have their motivation for being supportive, but I think overwhelmingly it's that desire for change, that it's time for Warringah to be represented differently.
So, I mean, obviously it's a deeply and delicate question, but how much money have you raised in a week?
Not nearly enough. I wish I could say there were great coffers. We're not there. But everything is positive in terms of we've had a huge number of volunteers sign up, and the funding is ahead of where most independent candidate campaigns would be at. So everything is on track. But I've also been incredibly lucky to have support from passionate local people, and that's across a number of areas of expertise, whether it's marketing and advertising and, you know, putting together videos and putting together websites and things like that. So it can't be underestimated the power of
A community.
Conviction.
Yes.
in terms of wanting, you know, there are people, I have people offering to help in every way nonstop.
God, sorry to laugh, but it's yes. Are you a bit overwhelmed by it? Is it how you thought it would be, or is it exceeding your expectations, the army turning up to help?
Look, it's everything I hoped it would be, but it's exceeding my expectations, if I can say it's both. I think you always really hope that it's going to resonate with people, and so far it really is. We're not naive. We know it's a big task at hand and we know we're the underdog. That's fine. I don't have a big party machine, but we do have a lot of goodwill and a lot of energy. I did meet with Dr. Phelps and, you know, I talked candidly about the process of campaigning and the ups and downs of politics, and she was incredibly encouraging in terms of how rewarding the ultimate outcome is.
Mm-hmm. And you've said you've spoken to Karen. What about other independents? I sort of get the impression that some of you are coordinating or at least sharing ideas, moral support, whatever you want to call it. To what extent is that going on?
Ironically, it's not.
Right.
It's kind of the conspiracy theory that's being thrown out there. I think what there is a common message, because we are, I think, that concern about climate change is Australia-wide, and it's something that's out there, that sort of the facts are in and everyone's concerned. And as a result, I think it's galvanising a lot of different electorates and people within those electorates to do something about it. So maybe independents who would normally not choose to go independent or choose to do it in the way they have are stepping up. And I think there is a momentum as well, in that it's always hard to be the lone person standing on your own. But I think Dr. Phelps created a certain optimism in her victory in Wentworth that is inspiring and motivating to others. I've never spoken to Julian Maddox. No. I've never spoken to Oliver Yates.
Yeah, right.
But I am really supportive of the stance they're taking, and I'm sure that we're not going to agree on everything, but I think we have a common concern to bring certain issues to the fore.
Do you think it's possible for the Liberal Party? I mean, you're all speaking about climate change as a pretty important issue, and I'm obsessed with climate change, as my regular listeners know. So you don't need to explain to me why climate change is important. But do you think, because it's so front and centre in your messaging, these sort of these insurgencies in the Liberal heartland, right, that it's possible for the Liberal Party to offer voters anything on climate change before the election that voters are going to believe?
Well, I know Julie Bishop's, there's been an inference that there's something's got to come or some message has to come. But the real question is, well, what is the position? Because at the moment, the party's gone so far to the far right that it's very difficult to see, well, where do you come back to from there? And there seems to be an inability or an unwillingness to, I think, as well. And I think that's very much what I picked up from Oliver Yates's message in terms of the internal challenge or the internal fight for control of where the policy direction should be, which is, I think, is what's fueling the frustration from a people's perspective, that we actually just want leadership and we want people to actually get on with the job, stop making it a political football and actually get on with doing something and something real, not just a Band-Aid. Mr. Abbott has never really offered much on the climate change policy platform. So I'll certainly welcome a debate on it.
You'll watch with interest.
If he's willing to. I think what's been interesting, though, is in terms of it's nearly like it's the far right of the Liberal Party is so out of touch with the fact that this is an issue that matters to the Australian people that the only kind of explanation they can come up with is it's a conspiracy theory, which I think just shows how out of touch they are. Mm,
sure. Are you prepared, because obviously in your opening salvo of your campaign, you've been very positive in your messaging. Obviously, implicitly, you're negative. Implicitly, you're standing up and saying that guy has had his day and he's obstructive and he's inflexible and all these sorts of things. But you're putting across in a very positive way. Is that what we're going to see from you in the campaign? Because I wonder if you can win by being positive when you're up against a figure who specialises in negative politics to, it must be said, great effect. Yeah. So are you prepared to grab him by the throat if you need to?
Look, I think you can only control what you can control, you know, what you do and the message and how you do it. I don't think I'm unique in thinking that having been quite dissatisfied with politics has gone in the, you know, of sort of the recent maybe few years where the debate gets quite aggressive. Mm. And I don't think that's the best way to go.
It's a genuine conundrum though, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Like, really, because people are repelled, as you say, by the negativity, yeah, for sure. Like, I get that from readers all the time. People think it's appalling and a turn off. Yet it cuts through, whereas standing up and being positive and here's the great shining light to which I will lead the citizens of Manly, is a bit more diffuse, isn't it? So how do you balance that? Because implicit negativity, I suspect, will get you so far, but will it get you over the line?
Well, I would hope not. And I think, in fact, it is actually the positivity of the message. At the end of the day, I think my personality, from my background in sport, even law, my current interests, it's all about getting the job done, but being in a positive way, focusing on what you can control. I can't control the negative message if that's what's being thrown at me, but I can control the debate, the issue, how to address the issues, what I stand for. It is an interesting part of our society that the negative message generally gets more cut through or more focus. But that maybe is part of what we need to try and address. I think a lot of people are very disconnected with politics and just disengaged. as a result of, well, it's just this negative debate that's going on over here and I'll just get on with my life. But then you have to wonder how much does that infiltrate the mood of a nation in terms of how positive, you know, people's outlook on life and how positive are they of the future. And I think there's a real responsibility in our leadership that
Not to drive people to despair.
You have to be offering some hope. as maybe corny as that sounds, you do. You have to. There has to be a plan. It can't just be doom and gloom. And there has to be that hope for a future, and the hope that we're leaving our kids a better future. And I think that infiltrates and permeates a lot of people's maybe mindset. And so I am hopeful that with the number of, I think there's some really interesting independents emerging, that we can hopefully create a more interesting, positive discourse and debate. And we're not all going to agree on everything. There's no doubt about it. But that we can at least have a respectful, constructive debate about it.
Are you all prepared? Well, you can only answer for yourself, so I'll only ask you for yourself. I won't suggest that you're the great conspiracy theory, you know, wielding blanc-mange. I won't. Yeah. I won't actually do that. But you, a number of you are small L liberals. Yeah. By disposition. I mean, I don't know if you've ever voted Labor in your life. So, and you've been associated either ideologically or practically with the Liberal Party, a number of you. It is possible, if these insurgencies in various electorates succeed, that you will succeed in removing a Liberal government from office. Does that cause you any pause? Does it give you any pause that if you succeed, if you take Warringah, the likelihood on the current evidence is that you will be going to Canberra with a Labor government?
Yeah, and I think then there's a real benefit in having an independent crossbench, because I think an independent crossbench is in a real position to hold to account a Labor government that a Liberal in opposition can't do. I think there's a very different position and opportunity there. My difficulty with the big parties and where the Liberal Party's at the moment is it has such an inner fight going on, and it's such an inner division, and it's got such a pull to the far right that I think I'm not alone in saying that there are just a lot of sensible centre, moderate, economically conservative, but socially progressive, that we want to see policies that reflect our values. When it came to the same-sex marriage last year with the plebiscite, when it comes to humane treatments of refugees, when it comes to social policies, an issue like climate change, we want to see progress. We want to be moving towards the future. And Tony Abbott tends to be a very backwards focused, I think, in his rhetoric. I know he talks a lot about sort of protecting and defending. It's all about sort of holding things back to the past and going back to an older way. And I just don't think that's very positive. So I think there is something really exciting to be offered by a strong crossbench.
And but if the casualties are Liberal government, you can live with it? You won't lose any sleep over it?
Not the current Liberal Party government, no.
And Liberals, you sort of said it just a little while ago, sort of inferentially, that Liberals were helping, or that you were getting support. You were getting support.
I can say it. I've got a huge support base from moderate Liberals who feel completely disenfranchised.
Who want Abbott out of the parliament.
Well, completely disenfranchised by where the far right and where it's going.
And are they giving you practical advice, tactical advice, insider gossip? What are they doing in order to assist you?
No, I don't think there's no Machiavellian. It's letters of encouragement. Like, so a lot of people writing in and saying, I'm so excited, thank you for doing this, we need this, we need to send the message, something's got to change. And we can't have a situation where if he goes back to Parliament and was in opposition and tried to be the leader again in opposition, it would just be yet another round of extremely negative discourse. That how does that move Australia forward.
Mm. And okay, just a couple of practical things. Preferences, what are you doing? Are you running an open ticket, or what's your plan?
My plan is, I as an independent, I feel the only true position really is asking the people to vote one for me, and then it's really up to their preferences, because this is a smart, clever electorate. Everyone has their voting preferences, and I think for me to enter into the fray of preferencing only impacts my standing as an independent.
Sure, but presumably your campaign people are speaking to other political parties with a view to trying to secure preference flows your way, even if you're not reciprocating. Are those conversations happening?
Look, not at this point just yet. I mean, we don't even know when the election's going to be with certainty. We don't know what the field will look like exactly. Not at this point, no. And look, there's community support. The key is getting a message that actually resonates, that people, you know, that we're addressing the concerns of the community. I have no control over what the other parties.
But it is electoral. Like, at the end of the day, it's maths. You know, if you win, it's a matter of maths as well as, you know, strategy. Yep. Talent,
yep.
Hard work, all of those things. It is maths. So your campaign team would be somewhat deficient, I would think, if they weren't reaching out to other political actors with a view to trying to harvest preferences for you. You're not saying it's not going to happen. You're just saying it's too early.
It's too early at this point. But and also the reality is we're aiming for a strong.
You want to get 50% primary vote.
Well, 51%. That's one way for the electorate of Warringah.
Do you think you can?
Well, everyone would have said being skiing world champion from Manly was impossible, and that was possible. So nothing is ever impossible.
You really think you can breach 50%?
Oh, look, I know it's a huge mountain to hope to climb, but you've got to set the goal. You've got to set it high. And I think if the level of dissatisfaction is high enough, then that's how people can really make their voice heard.
Okay. And in terms of you know, I've watched enough elections to know that it ain't over ever until it's over. So I'm putting that caveat on this entire conversation, but specifically in relation to a change of government. All the field evidence suggests to us that there will be a Labor government later in the year. That's what it looks like. Obviously, these things can change. Labor's program is, most of it is well and truly in the public domain. Some of it, or a great deal of it, has been in the public domain for two election cycles. There's contentious propositions for a small L liberal like yourself, like negative gearing, like dividend imputation, like changes to capital gains tax. Where do you stand on those issues?
I don't support the policies they're putting forward in that respect, especially like the franking credits. As a lot of those proposed changes will impact self-funded retirees enormously. And we are talking about people who have set up their investment strategies on the advice of the Australian government, you know, the encouragement of numerous Australian governments to invest into the Australian share market, that is how to be self-funded, and that is all going to support the economy. So I do have an issue with that whole idea, the proposal, which I think will put a huge amount of stress on self-funded retirees. Now, I appreciate that's not everybody's concerned, and I appreciate that others have different views. I see as an independent on the crossbench is an opportunity to apply as much pressure and debate to minimise, I guess, the impact on as many groups possible mm-hmm. of the proposed changes.
And what about negative gearing?
I don't support the changes at the moment
right.
as they're proposed.
Okay.
Again, I don't have the full detail ultimately of what would be presented, but no, in principle of what's been proposed, I don't support it.
Okay, and do you think that those policy offerings of Labor's are deleterious to their election prospects? Do you think that it is problematic? Obviously, the government is making a big fuss about those policies at the present time and trying to. We can all see the strategy. You're about in your own community. What's your read about where people are at about that stuff? Is it negative for Labor? Do you think it could cost Labor an election?
Well, it's a hard sense, I think, in the electorate in Warringah, because it's just not an electorate that's ever really turned.
You're in a different place.
So yeah. I don't think I'm exposed to the same kind of sentiment as other electorates would be. I think there's a high level of concern of what the impact of the proposed changes will have, and also what they would have on the economy in terms of flow on effect of the changes. So there is that level of concern, and I certainly think that impacts the popularity of any Labor candidate in a seat like Warringah. Again, as an independent, the key will be to try and achieve the best outcomes possible for the electorate and to represent the concerns of the area. So, of course, not being in government, you don't have the opportunity to really control the outcomes and policy. But there is that opportunity to try and negotiate or debate or bring, you know, try and fine tune where possible, and focus on some of the local issues. I think ultimately that will be matter on some of the social issues. There's aspects of the Labor policy that I think are a good start, but they don't go far enough. And so then I think the role will be to push them to aim for more.
Such as?
On climate change.
Oh, okay. You don't think Labor's policy is strong enough?
I don't think it's ambitious enough. And again, look, I'll be advised by experts. I'm no expert on climate change. I'm a concerned resident and concerned on the issue. And to me, I think it's something that needs to be bipartisan. It needs to be supported by facts and supported by the experts across all the industries, so that we really come up with a strategy that has longevity, that is a long-term plan, not something that's a quick sort of one cycle fix. Because we've had that political football, and all we've ended up with is up and down results. The last 4 years have seen increased emissions. So because everyone sort of goes on their agenda, and I would really push for this to be a bipartisan, it's a global issue.
Absolutely. What about the Adani coal mine? Do you think that Labor should oppose it?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. Our financial institutions aren't prepared to lend or invest into coal projects. Why should the Australian people's money be invested in a project?
But it's different. I don't think Labor's proposing taxpayer funds. Just to be clear about your position, you think that if Labor wins the election, they should use whatever regulatory powers they have in order to stop this project from proceeding?
I do. I think we should be really implementing an orderly retirement of coal. I don't think we should be entering into new projects. The attention should be in renewables, new technology, clean transport, clean energy, not projects like Adani.
Well, thank you very much for coming in, and thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. We really do appreciate it. Don't forget, because you may have forgotten over the summer, subscribe, share, tell your friends, download via your favourite podcast app, tell more of your friends, leave us a rating or a review. Thanks also to my producers, Miles Martignoni and Hannah Izzard. You're wonderful. You rock. See you all next week.